number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, I don't know how much of the Pro Bowl in Hawaii you watched today or the NHL All-Star game you watched, but if you're looking for entertainment value, I got to admit, it looked like the NHL All-Star game was a lot better than what the Pro Bowl was offering. Sport to sport, I know I will never convince you guys that hockey was better than a football game, but the Pro Bowl has a problem. It's a game I don't think anybody is interested in playing. So what do we do with it? Do we have to do anything with it? Today they were playing two-hand touch. Nobody was tackling. Everybody was just kind of having fun, trying to get the game over with. It ended up being a 49-27 route by Team Michael Irvin over Team Jerry Rice, which I don't like, by the way. Just make it AFC, NFC. Don't pick teams. That's dumb. But there were plenty of turnovers. Again, no one was tackling. And no, I don't want anybody to tackle. I think Tyler Eifert got hurt. I think he ended up leaving the game with a walking boot, which is one walking boot too many in a Pro Bowl, by the way. But the NHL All-Star game that was held in Nashville was a 3-on-3 tournament of the divisions. And remember the story that we told you about John Scott, the Arizona Coyote who got picked to go to the All-Star game by a fan write-in vote and then was subsequently traded and then sent to the minors so he couldn't go to the All-Star game? And then there was a backlash. And then Gary Bettman in the NHL said, "All right, I guess he can go to the All-Star game." Yeah, he ended up the MVP. He scored twice and got the MVP. The guy the league didn't want in the All-Star game and then said, "Oh yeah, I guess you could go," was the most valuable player. Crazy, right? I don't know. I feel like I got played on that story. I really do. I don't know why, but I don't feel like that's quite on the up and up. Like the NHL was like, you know, it would be cool to spark some interest in this game. Let's send one of the All-Stars down to the minors and then see what kind of storm gets created. And then let him in the game and see if he'll score some goals and make him the All-Star game. We'll look like the heavy, but in the end, the fans will feel like there's some sort of vindication. That story is too good to be true. John Scott, the "I'm not really an all-star, I don't quite deserve to be here, in fact, what the hell am I doing here," became the MVP of the All-Star game. Did you watch any of the All-Star game today? I did not. I didn't see a second of it.
I saw some of the NHL. I did not see a single second of the Pro Bowl.
I did the opposite. I saw a little bit of the Pro Bowl, but not 1 second live of the NHL All-Star game, which was sad because it's in my city.
What I took away from the NHL All-Star game, the 3-on-3 tournament, was I think it has something there. We were talking in the break. The ice needs to be smaller. It's too big for 3-on-3. Especially when you're doing a whole game like that. You know, they did two 10-minute periods. The ice has to be smaller. If you can shorten the ice up and do, you know, I don't know, maybe half the rink size, you could have some real fun there. You know, guys just flying around. They don't have to skate so far. It keeps them fresher. And I'm sure that the guys would actually obviously prefer it as well. So I think they have something. And then you add in with the skills competition, which is actually fun. I watched a good chunk of that as well. I mean, that's a fun weekend.
You know, listen, the NHL is at least willing to tinker with its All-Star game. It realizes it doesn't have a product that's really, really good for an All-Star game. There's no defense. It ends up being 15-13. You know, it's sloppy, and that gets old quickly. There isn't any conference pride. There's nothing along those lines like Major League Baseball has, where AL and NL, there's some roots there. It's tried a number of things. It's tried U.S. versus the world. It's tried the picking teams thing. right now they've got this new overtime rule, this 3-on-3 overtime rule. I think they want to showcase. They turned this into a fun little tournament. I thought it was great. I saw enough of the highlights to think it was entertaining. Smaller rink, you bet. And I think that's something they'll probably address. The NHL All-Star Game, though, at least is willing to tinker with it to try to give some sort of entertainment value to the fans. What I think the Pro Bowl has become is the Pro Bowl has become the NFL has looked at the Pro Bowl in a number of ways. They've had it at different locations and whatnot. But I think what it came down to was, look, people in Hawaii love it. People, the players go to Hawaii. We have a good time. They're signing autographs. This is the first time some of these people on the islands get to see these pro athletes. So let's make it about them. TV audience, who cares? The ratings will either be there or won't. We're not going to get hurt. We're not going to tackle. We're going to have fun. We're going to have guys playing quarterback that don't play quarterback. Let's just turn this into a you know, whatever it is. But I don't like it. I don't like it. And I'm trying really hard not to be the old stooge. I say this all the time whenever I say I don't like it. I don't want to be the, I don't like it because back in my day, I don't want to be that guy. But Team Jerry Rice and Team Michael Irvin, I'm sorry, that's not working. Picking teams is not working. Look, I want AFC and NFC. Just give me that because I want Eli Manning throwing passes to other NFC wide receivers. I want to see Tyrod Taylor throwing passes to AFC wide receivers. I don't even know who I have to look through the box score to try to find who is on what team. I don't want teammates playing against teammates. I don't need that stuff. Just have the AFC versus NFC and let's have some fun. Go from there. You don't want to tackle? God love you. I don't want to see you get tackled. I don't need that kind of level of intensity. But I certainly don't. I don't know. I just there's the seems like the Pro Bowl is broken and they don't know how to fix it.
Well, and the one thing with football is in the NBA and even hockey to an extent, you can have some fun with it. You can do, you know, NBA, you can do alley-oops. These guys like Patrick Kane can do amazing stuff with the puck.
Exactly.
That they can try, especially in 3-on-3. The NFL, you just can't do that. You can't just throw the ball up for Odell Beckham Jr. and let him try and make some catch. Just because it just doesn't tend to work that way in the NFL. And these cornerbacks aren't going to really just let that kind of stuff happen. And so I just feel like there's just not a whole lot the NFL can really do with
this
thing.
They can't. You're right. There really isn't anything they can do. Because let's be honest, right? I mean, the guys that play in this game, their number one concern is don't get hurt. Because you can get hurt even in a game where there's no tackling. You can get hurt in freakish ways, right? There's other – you could go up for a pass and land wrong. You could try to make a cut and tear a ligament. I mean, there's a number of ways that you can suffer a freak injury. And I'm not saying that's on the forefront of their minds, you know, when they're out there. But, I mean, for some of these guys – listen, the last thing you want to do is leave Hawaii with a torn ACL because of something ridiculous.
Yeah, because, I mean, think about it. It's the end of the season. You tear an ACL now, you're missing all of next season.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I can only, if you've got bumps and bruises, it's so easy to get to just go, I ain't going. I'm not going to Hawaii. Because if you're going to Hawaii, you're going to play. And so a lot of guys are just not even taking the trip. And I don't blame them. I mean, I watched a little bit of the game and everybody was just being really careful. Everyone was. And so what are the fans getting when they're at Aloha Stadium? What are they getting? What they're getting is an experience of, hey, we never get to see these guys live. And even if they're just playing two-hand touch, let's watch them live. It's one of the reasons I was glad they went back to Hawaii, because I don't think this game is really sellable in your Super Bowl city or someplace or another place. I don't think it's sellable. I think if you put it in a city that's got NFL football, people will go out for just the novelty of it, kind of cool. But in Hawaii, people tended to really like what they were like, just seeing these guys. But the game, please, it's a turnover fest, waste of time.
And I hope the NHL realized that they really weren't missing Alex Ovechkin and Jonathan Toews.
Absolutely.
They don't need to be suspended.
No.
I mean, they're going to be suspended no matter what because that's the rule this year. But I hope they fix it because those guys, I mean, yeah, you would love to have those two guys there, obviously, but they weren't missed. It wasn't like, oh, this weekend just sucked because those two weren't there.
And you hit it right on the head. Look, the other sport, freak injuries can occur, right, all the time.
Yeah.
But really, who's going to get hurt at the NBA All-Star game,
right?
Right? It's a no-defense basket fun, let's have a great time and hit some jumpers and just goof off and party. NHL, same way. We're not hitting, we're not doing anything, we're just skating around, flicking a puck around. Baseball, people have gotten hurt at the All-Star game before, but there's so much pride in being an All-Star, nobody skips it. The NFL, everybody's skipping it, right? Just almost everybody's skipping it because in the end, it's not worth the risk of maybe a suffering an injury when you've got so many bumps and bruises. There's no other way for the Pro Bowl to change that, but just have some fun, I guess.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio and also like our Facebook page, Tony D Radio Show. Let us know you're out there. Let us say hi to you. 800-777-2907. So, question about Peyton Manning. Will we look at Peyton Manning and relish his career and his accomplishments and everything that he's meant to the game of football if he suffers another blowout? Or will we hang this one on his career kind of like we did 2 years ago? This is a more interesting question than 2 years ago, because in this one, Manning isn't expected to be the leading guy when it comes to a Bronco victory. It is almost a foregone conclusion that Manning's career has now hit the quote-unquote game manager level. Fair or unfair, that's the way he's being perceived. Manning has had trouble in the postseason. Everybody who's been following his career has been perplexed one time or another at his inability to win a certain game along the line. Even though winning in the playoffs is tough, and even winning a Super Bowl is harder. You need a lot of things to go right. But Manning's career has had rather puzzling losses. And yet, he finds himself in his fourth Super Bowl. And if it goes the way people think it's going to go, a lot of people think it's going to go, where the Broncos lose by double digits in another NFC route, if that's how it plays out, will we be able to relish the moment of watching Manning's final game? Will we look back and say, eh, as I said earlier tonight, this has been a strange journey for Peyton Manning. He's not going to go out the gunslinger. He is not going out on top of his game. He is not going out as one of the better quarterbacks in the league. That time has passed him. People don't realize how close he was to not being in this position right now. You don't have to rewind the tape of the season that far. Go back to week 17. Denver at home against San Diego. The Broncos score on not only the opening drive, but within the first minute. Things look like it's going smoothly for Osweiler in yet another home victory for the Denver Broncos. They'll lock up the number one seed. But a funny thing happened. The Broncos offense stalled again, as it had done in the game against the Raiders, like it had done in the game in San Diego against the Chargers. The offense stalled. And it stalled enough that Gary Kubiak made the switch. What if it hadn't stalled? What if it just crisply went through the whole game, putting up 35 points? If it had done that, we would not be here talking about one last ride for the sheriff. We'd be pointing to the bench and saying, well, there he is, going to a Super Bowl, but not really. And I'm glad at least he has the chance to either win this game or lose this game. Not on the bench, carrying a clipboard, talking to Brock Osweiler about the Carolina defense and how to exploit it. You know, Jim McMahon has a Super Bowl with the Chicago Bears, but he also has a Super Bowl as Brett Favre's backup with the Green Bay Packers. I didn't want Peyton Manning to have a Super Bowl as Brock Osweiler's backup. I didn't want Manning's career to be, yeah, got a ring when I was with the Colts, got a ring when I was a backup to a 25-year-old quarterback. I'm glad he at least will be a factor in whether or not the Broncos win or lose this game. And for that, no matter how a Brock Osweiler team would have performed, I think that's better for us than the other way. Because if this guy wins this Super Bowl, the loss to the Steelers in the playoffs, the Jets in the playoffs, the Chargers twice in the playoffs, the Patriots in the playoffs, the Baltimore Ravens, the Indianapolis Colts when he was with Denver, the Seattle Seahawks, a lot of that stuff can go away from the resume and go away quickly by walking away hoisting the trophy. All of that talk about chokes in the playoffs, one and done. How many times has Manning gone in with this team only to lose? All of that. We will put that all aside. Maybe that's for another day. Maybe that's for another conversation. People really won't care about when the career is over. But walking away with that trophy. I'm glad we're at this point where he gets to do that. But what if he loses and loses big? What if it's the same old kind of loss? See, on this one, it's different. Because on this one, it would be okay. Because he isn't the centerpiece of where the Broncos are going to be successful. Do they need him? Of course. Do they need him to be what he has always been to every team he's been on? To every collection of players around him? Does he have to be that same person in all of those years with the Colts, in all of the years leading up to the season in Denver? He does not. He does not have to be that guy. And yet, if he walks away a winner, he'll be like all of those guys he was. It's really, really an interesting situation that he finds himself in. This Broncos team could lose by double digits and it not necessarily be his fault. What are the realistic expectations for this guy? He's Peyton Manning, for crying out loud, but does anybody honestly think it's a 4-touchdown, 450-yard performance? No. Is it hand the ball off and hope the offensive line gets enough holes for the running game? Seems to be where people are with this. But I hope I don't get an embarrassed Peyton Manning. I hope. I saw that 2 years ago. And while I remember doing the postgame show here and saying, look, all praises should go to Pete Carroll and the Seahawks. All of it. They dismantled the best offense we have seen in a long time. Tore it apart. Ripped it to shreds. Nothing but toughness. Made every single Bronco that even dared to go over the middle a target. Confused Manning all day long. It wasn't even about Manning's inability to do this or that. It was the impressiveness of the Seahawks. Saw this 2 years ago. I want to see a game in which if Peyton Manning plays well, the Broncos win. If Peyton Manning plays well, Carolina could still win. If Peyton Manning plays exceptionally well, it could be one last ride into the sunset that erases a lot of the negativity in his playoffs. Cam Newton, I'd love to say, will be back, right? I'd love to. I'd love to say if he loses, oh, that's okay. Cam Newton will be back. You know who we said that about and it never, ever happened again? Dan Marino, Super Bowl 19. Never saw him again. Coming up next, Eddie Radosovich joins us. Soonerscoop.com on the number one Oklahoma Sooners. That's next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loan Studios.
And back to Tony D.
It's Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hey, thanks for joining us. Eddie Radosovich joining us from Soonerscoop.com. And the reason I bring this up is because we always get him on because with the Sooners, they're good at football and they're really good at basketball. So we got to get the inside scoop on the Sooners. He joins us on our Progressive Insurance Hotline to give us the take on the number one team in the nation, 18-2, coming off a win against LSU, part of the Big 12 SEC Challenge. Eddie, how are you, my friend?
Tony, how's it going?
Good, man. Listen, so this, the Sooners, let me ask you this question right now. How was this team built over the last couple of years to get to this point where they're number one?
Well, it's been a process, and I think that Oklahoma fans, it maybe has even turned around faster than they thought it would have, considering where they were as a program when Long Kruger took over. Just the kind of the evolution of the players that have bought into the system, and of course, their own work ethic as well, getting in and getting a lot of shots up during the summer, and it's kind of all come to fruition as it's kind of led by that trio of seniors, Isaiah Cousins, Buddy Hield, of course, and Ryan Spangler. And then you look at their fourth starter in Jordan Woodard, who's played since a freshman, and so they're a very veteran group, and it's all kind of starting to come together, and really I think everybody around Oklahoma and around Norman is, I don't know if surprised would be the word, but just kind of enjoying the ride, I think, would be the best way to put it, and especially the way that that Buddy Hield elevated his game. And now it seems like you turn on any type of college basketball program in Oklahoma, and certainly Buddy Hield's going to be mentioned. And it's all kind of come together for Long Kruger here the last year. And certainly the direction that I think Joe Castiglione, the athletic director, kind of envisioned when he hired Lon to come in from UNLV a couple years ago.
As far as Buddy Hield, we know he's a good player, but is he exceeding expectations with this National Player of the Year talk, or did they kind of figure he was one of those guys that could win this thing?
You know, I think probably behind closed doors, the Oklahoma coaching staff and everybody a part of the Oklahoma basketball program, they might have thought that he had a chance, but I think the everyday fan and even someone like myself who covers the team goes to practice every other day and sees him practice. I don't think that I expected anything that he was anything close to what he's producing right now. You look at his 8-30-plus point game yesterday of the season against Louisiana State on Saturday and in the big win in Baton Rouge, and just the way that he's kind of led this team and been able to put it on his back in a bunch of games down the stretch. I think talking to people is kind of funny. It seems like every time Oklahoma's on a national televised game this year, Hield has given the viewers at home something to remember him by and kind of something to remember this Oklahoma team by, and certainly one of the reasons why I think that a lot of people are looking at them to be a title contender when the Final Four gets going down in Houston here in a couple months, in about a month and a half, I guess.
Eddie, we can talk a lot about their impressive wins, but I want to talk about the impressive loss at Kansas in that classic that everybody is still saying it's the game of the year by far. What did that team feel like walking off that? I mean, it was a game where Kansas fans gave them a standing ovation, but did they feel the level, that kind of level, or were they just, hey, we lost and that and there's no joy taken out of this?
No, I think it was definitely a game that, you know, if they would have gotten beat on a final shot in regulation, maybe it's a little bit different. But when you go triple overtime, I think they kind of walked out there with a sense of belonging, a sense of being able to stand on that national stage, a sense of saying that, yeah, they are here and they can compete for a national title. And it's kind of weird to say that with them coming out of Lawrence with a loss. But at the same time, I think it kind of made them almost a little bit more hungry. They played better since that game in Lawrence. And I think maybe even going back to games that they've lost in Lawrence and then, of course, in Ames Monday after, and even going back to the game Saturday in Baton Rouge, I don't know if without that experience, without the way that they played in the non-conference, I don't know if they would have been able to pull out a game like they did on Saturday in Baton Rouge. And so I do think that that loss in Lawrence, even though it was a loss, even though it did hurt them, you know, Buddy Hield's probably one of the most competitive kids I've seen. It hurt them, but at the same time, I think they learned from it. They realized it didn't end their season. It's not like a college football game where one loss can derail a whole season. So they did take a lot out of it, and I think that that you're seeing the kind of the fruition of those close games and the way that they prepared here the last 3-4 years here down the stretch, and I think it'll certainly pay dividends once they get into NCAA tournament and, of course, the the rest of the Big 12 schedule and the Big 12 tournament in Kansas City.
Eddie Radosovich joins us, Soonerscoop.com, on the Oklahoma Sooners again, 18-2, number one in the nation. Oh, again, with Buddy Hield, let's talk about Isaiah Cousins. What is his big contribution to the team? I know he can fire it from the outside, but what kind of season is he having so far?
He's having a very good year. I think that he struggled probably for about the 3-4 games here before this last week. But since then, you've seen a kind of a completely different Isaiah Cousins. Of course, he makes a couple big shots down the stretch in Baton Rouge. He finishes with 18 points. His last four games, though, he's 11-for-15 from behind the arc. And he's kind of a guy that really is kind of seen as a catalyst. You know what Buddy Hield's going to bring to the gym every night. It's been a question of what Isaiah Cousins can bring. And he's been probably at times throughout his career in Norman. He's been kind of a scapegoat when they've gotten beat. He's been a guy that people have looked at as a key, as a guy that really needs to play well if Oklahoma wants to have success. And I think that you're starting to see him grow a little bit more in confidence as well. Here, as I said, 11-for-15 from behind the arc, and it certainly seems like when he is doing well and running the point for Oklahoma, it allows Jordan Woodard to play a little bit more of the two, and he's been able to shoot the ball well. So it's been really a good move for Oklahoma. It was putting him at the one, and the way that he's been able to operate the offense certainly has helped Oklahoma. And moving forward, going down the backstretch, obviously, backcourt play is extremely important once you get to March. He's going to be a guy that is going to need to be a pretty big key for Oklahoma if they want to win this whole thing.
So if Hield has an off night, is it on the shoulders of Isaiah Cousins or Ryan Spangler? Does either one of those guys have to carry that slack, or is it a team, do they pick up the Sooners?
You know, I think that's probably the biggest key for them, is because they do have so much experience in the starting five. They can rely on, if Buddy has an off night, they can rely on Isaiah Cousins, Jordan Woodard to pick up the pieces. I know down in Waco a couple weeks ago, it was Buddy Hield that he struggled in the first half, and Jordan Woodard was able to light him up for 20 points. And even though he didn't score in the second half, he kept him in the first half and allowed Buddy Hield to kind of take over in the second half after a frustrating first half, getting into foul trouble early. So you do kind of look at the starters, and they're getting a lot better play off the bench, and that's something that that Long Kruger's talked about for quite a while. Even though that there are a lot of guys that haven't played a whole lot, they continue to progress throughout the season, and I've been talking with guys like Dante Woodard or Dante Buford, Christian James, Cole Demanyang, a 7-footer, JUCO big man that really hasn't played a whole lot, but he plays meaningful minutes. So it's a team effort when Buddy isn't shooting right. But those might seem like there's far and few between here lately, as Hield has been consistently lighting it up almost every night Oklahoma goes out on the court.
All right, real quick, I want to ask you about the Big 12. And again, Eddie Radosovich, Soonerscoop.com. It's 10 teams. How deep is this conference in terms of quality teams?
It's a very good conference. It's kind of ridiculous to think that even looking at Oklahoma's schedule, you don't have an off night. It's tough. Anywhere that you go, even if it's down in Lubbock, Cubby Smith has that program back to a respectable level. You saw what Oklahoma State can do in Gallagher Ivy, even though that program's not where it used to be. They knocked off Kansas last week. So there's no off night in the Big 12, and it certainly prepares you for the NCAA tournament. And Oklahoma feels like they're kind of set up in good spots now with trips to Lawrence and a trip to Ames already in the rearview mirror. And actually done with Iowa State. They've already played them twice this season. So their schedule, I guess, quote-unquote, it's easier, but at the same time, it really doesn't get easier. And you look at, you still have a team in Texas that they haven't played. Shaka Smart has that group playing really well right now. And, of course, a trip to Morgantown ahead as well for Oklahoma. So it's still going to be tough, but I think that door of, or that grasp, that stranglehold that Kansas has had on the Big 12 regular season title, it might be the year that somebody else outside of Lawrence takes home the regular season title. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch here over the next couple of weeks.
Eddie Radosovich, Soonerscoop.com. Always great talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Tony, anytime. I appreciate it.
God, that conference is so deep. It's fun. Texas is sneaky good. They're going to play Baylor Monday night. Not only, you know, Baylor, Iowa State, we talked about Oklahoma, Kansas, of course, West Virginia. It's a very good conference. Big 12 is a ton of fun. All right, coming up, for you Cowboy fans, the state in Super Bowl history, January 31st in Pasadena over Buffalo. We'll talk about that game next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, glad you could be with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue to look at past Super Bowls on this date. January 31st is the date we were looking at earlier tonight. We took a look at Super Bowl 22, Washington over the Denver Broncos, 42-10. Doug Williams with a four touchdowns in the second quarter. Timmy Smith had two touchdown runs in the game. They won 42-10. This one happened in 1993, January of 1993. The Dallas Cowboys went to Pasadena to play the Buffalo Bills. For the Cowboys, first Super Bowl in a while. For the Buffalo Bills, well, they had just been there the year before and the year before that, losing Super Bowl 25 to the New York Giants and Super Bowl 26 to the Washington Redskins. And they came into Super Bowl 27 as the more experienced football team, and Troy Aikman and the Dallas Cowboys were coming in, well, you know, Super Bowl novices. It had been a while for the Dallas Cowboys to have been in that position and in that game. Well, this game ends up being one of the most lopsided games in Super Bowl history. But more importantly, it carried with it a lot of memorable moments of Super Bowl past. First of all, this was the worst game the Buffalo Bills played in the Super Bowl. They had a game in which they could not get, you know, stay on the field against the New York Giants and couldn't get off the field defensively for the Giants. But they also, in the Washington Redskins loss the next year, while it wasn't a well-played game by the Buffalo Bills, it paled in comparison to what they did in this game against the Cowboys. Turned the ball over 9 times, and there were some really, really memorable moments for Dallas. Here is one of them, courtesy of NBC television.
First down just inside the Bills' 20. Aikman, touchdown, Michael Irvin. Bob Trumpy, you talked about the rhythm game, Aikman and his receivers. 1, 2, 3, throw, and that was a textbook example of their success.
That was Dick Enberg with the call. Bob Trumpy was the commentator for NBC. Michael Irvin had 2 touchdown catches in that game and back-to-back touchdowns by the Cowboys of 19 yards and 18 yards. It was a banner day for Dallas. They routed Buffalo again, 52-17. The Bills turned the ball over, as I said, 9 times. But this game also marked one of the more famous plays in Super Bowl history. And it was a play that involved Leon Lett. You probably know where I'm going with this. Where Lett had gotten the football, was running it back for a touchdown as he was crossing the goal line, had stuck out the ball a bit, and Don Beebe, who raced from behind, caught Lett, knocked the ball out, and put it in the end zone. It was ruled a touchback. If Lett had just tucked it in and scored a touchdown, the Dallas Cowboys would probably to this day hold the record for most points in a Super Bowl. But it became one of those, like, hallmark plays that even in defeat, even in despair, Don Beebe never gave up on the play. Coaches have used this play as motivation all the time to start saying about you never give up, play to the whistle blows, that kind of thing. Don Beebe would later go on and get a Super Bowl ring with the Green Bay Packers, but this was part of his Super Bowl lore in this game. But this was a complete and utter nightmare for the Buffalo Bills. And this is when we talked about this with Denver in the last segment. That moment of where were Bronco fans? Where was the city thinking when it was yet another Super Bowl loss in this pretty big wave of the Washington Redskins in Super Bowl 22? That would probably just completely come to fruition after the San Francisco 49ers throttled them 2 years later. For the Bills, this was the third straight Super Bowl that they had lost in a game that they were predicted to win this game. They were the more experienced team. They were still Jim Kelly, the K-gun offense. They were still a team that had stars and stars galore. But when you turn the ball over, bad things happen. And when you turn the ball over 9 times, horrible, horrible things happen. And that's what happened to the Bills in this game. And for Dallas, it was that return to greatness. For the Cowboys, it was that return to a Super Bowl, a championship, one that they hadn't had since Super Bowl 12. And there they were, Super Bowl champs again. Troy Aikman talked about vomiting before the game. He was so nervous. But of all the things that happened on the field, and again, the route was on. They scored 21 points in the fourth quarter. Emmitt Smith had a touchdown run. There was a fumble return for a touchdown by Ken Norton. Again, just an overall Dallas Cowboy dominance. The game will also be remembered, too, for the time the halftime show changed. Before, the NFL had used, in the beginning of the Super Bowl era, the Super Bowl was college bands. Grambling State had a number of times where they were in the Super Bowl. Up With People, we joked about that, was an act. Disney produced Super Bowl halftime shows, like you see sometimes at the opening event of an Olympics with various performers, various songs. The Super Bowl halftime show for this particular one in Pasadena was Michael Jackson. And Michael Jackson was responsible, may be responsible, for the most watched moment in television history. This game certainly had its share of audience, but this performance was so big and so popular that other networks didn't run counter programming during the halftime like they had done in years past. The halftime show was relatively boring for many, many, many years. Michael Jackson not only put on a show, but the NFL started thinking, we have to now go in another direction. And the halftime show was never the same after this particular Super Bowl in Pasadena. Now, all of a sudden, when you have acts like Kiss and Bruce Springsteen and Prince and Paul McCartney and Coldplay and Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson and all the big acts of the time, it all stemmed from this Super Bowl, from the moment that Michael Jackson went on stage. This is when the NFL started going, yeah, we can get big artists. We can get the popular acts of the day. And it still continues to this day. But the Dallas Cowboys would go on to win 3 out of the 4 Super Bowls. And it started right here on this date in 1993, where they routed the Buffalo Bills. And you know what was interesting about it? They would do it exactly the same way a year later. Not quite the route, but they would beat the Bills again when the Bills suffered their 4th straight loss. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.